Picture that super soft t-shirt you love sleeping in. The one that gets softer and softer the more you wear it. Now you can bring that same lived-in softness to your entire bed with Signature Vintage Wash Sheets from Boll & Branch. This all-new collection is even softer than your favorite t-shirt, with a distinctly relaxed look and feel for your best night's sleep. Just like all Boll & Branch bedding, Signature Vintage Wash Sheets start with the highest quality, 100% organic cotton. The lived-in feel comes from a small batch washing process, creating a level of softness you've never felt before. And it's not just the feel. Boll & Branch mastered the laid-back aesthetic using a special technique that creates the well-loved look you'll find with vintage jeans. And true to the Boll & Branch hallmark, Signature Vintage Wash Sheets get softer and softer with every wash. Right now, you can get 15% off your first order with promo code ODYSSEY and save on their most relaxing sheets. So head to BollAndBranch.com today. That's B-O-L-L and Branch.com.
Call from Mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
The following is a GoPowerCat.com production.
Just when you're ready to write off the Kansas State Wildcats, they go and do something that you didn't fully expect. They knock off number 6 Iowa State. But what does this mean for the Wildcats heading into the Big 12 tournament? We will discuss. And welcome to the Big 12 Insiders.
Welcome to the K-State Insiders, your Kansas State sports show, presented by Synergy Financial Partners. Now let's go to the rolling Flint Hills, home of the Cats and Dogs studio. Here's your host, Tim Fitzgerald.
Oh, Brian Hanley, what happened here? I had it picked right. There we go.
I was going to say, you changed up the format on us.
This isn't the Big 12 Insiders. It's the K-State Insiders.
First, you got the name wrong. Then you change the format. I mean, let's get it together, man.
I know. No doubt. No doubt. I am a mess. Back from Topeka. I visited Glenstown today. I saw a statue. Oh, my gosh. The pigeons were crapping on it. other than that, Glenstown was doing fine. Had a little oncology visit today. Everything's fine. I'm remarkably healthy for a man with stage 4 cancer. It's just kind of weird. I had to get this to get in better shape. Boys, how we doing, man? How was your weekend?
It's good. It's good. Good college basketball was on, so had a good time.
Yeah, we had a busy weekend, not just the college, but also a lot of high school hoops here in Kansas. So a little state tournament action. Nothing gets me fired up like that. So it was almost a little teaser for March Madness at the high school level, and then we get college next year in a few weeks.
Any big upsets on the high school front?
Shout out to the Frankfort High School girls basketball, first ever state title. They beat Little River in the 1A state championship, and Little River was undefeated.
Wow. Wow.
Anyone in the chat from Frankfort, they're called the Wildcats too.
I know. But I want to change their mascot to the Urs.
Okay.
Little River should be the band. But that's an old man reference because people don't realize it was a Little River band. Boys, K-State wins. They beat Iowa State. Brian, I'm not surprised they beat Iowa State. I'm surprised that they sustained an effort through a game. Look, offensively, both teams struggled in the first half because these are two good defensive teams. But K-State sustained and stayed the course, and it's something they just haven't done this season. They didn't really correct the turnovers. They just didn't do the same kind of turnovers. The live ball turnovers are so damaging. And they outscored an opponent off turnovers. What?
Yeah.
It was a good effort.
Well, the one thing is, it's like the turnover bug usually gets them when we have 18 turnovers and another team has 11. And again, right, the live ball turnovers, where this one was just 15 to 14. So it doesn't hurt you as bad. But the one thing, Fitz and Glenn, that K-State did, that I don't know how many teams have out-rebounded Iowa State, but K-State beat them up on the boards. And that always is the deterrent as far as, you know, it evens things out when you, when you're talking about turnovers. But when you don't turn over the ball, you know, 10 more times than somebody else, but you out rebound them by 9, a lot of times you're going to win that basketball game. And that's what K-State was able to do. And just what you said, Fitz, effort. Well, rebounding the basketball is effort. And so that's what they showed. They just showed a lot of effort. It was a game that they had to win. Look, David Gasan, I mean, 16 rebounds in that basketball game. I mean, he was out there playing outstanding. Look, yeah, a lot of people get on him because he's not tough enough, which I don't think that had ever had anything to do with it. He's just not big. That's the difference. He's just not big. Always gives effort. And he was out there playing like, this might be the last college basketball game that I get to play. And that's the kind of effort that they're going to need from here on out if they have any possible chance of winning two games in this Big 12 tournament. But I love the effort that the guy showed.
Glenn, man, Iowa State's been rolling. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Basically, these two teams took different directions after they met names.
Yeah.
Iowa State took off. K-State kind of came apart. Well, they didn't kind of. They did come apart. So this was a good kind of reset, but it's probably too late. I don't know. We'll see what happens in Kansas City.
Yeah, it's a top 10 win, so one that certainly boosts the resume, but one that probably doesn't matter if you lose to Texas in your first game in Kansas City. It's going to help if you're on that bubble. I think they're going to need a win or two in Kansas City to get on that bubble. If they do, if they're on the bubble, don't get me wrong, a win against number 6 Iowa State boosts the resume big time. I think this was a huge one for Jerome Tang's team, and quite frankly, gives you a little bit of confidence going into the Big 12 tournament. Had they lost on Saturday, it was why even make the trip to Kansas City type of thing. And so it's a big win because it might help them get the next win. And like you mentioned it, Brian, the toughness I think was huge. There was that meme on Twitter, I think, when Houston and Iowa State played, of like a rugby match of guys just beating the hell out of each other. And that is kind of Iowa State basketball. And K-State, instead of shying away from that, I think kind of just said, all right, you want to get tough, we'll get tough. And Tang talked about it, but they responded well. And I think it says a lot about the character of this group, because he called him out in Allen Fieldhouse when his players were sitting right next to him. And he goes that, well, there was an effort and they didn't play hard enough and the other team wanted it more. And the other team ran faster than us and cut harder than us and jumped higher than us. And he called him out. And instead of saying, well, oh, our coach was mean to us and he made us feel silly in front of all those reporters, these guys said, hey, why don't we toughen up a little bit? So I thought that response was impressive. And it says a lot about the buy-in that they have, even if they still on the outside looking in from a tournament perspective.
Yeah. I've had some issues with effort and focus throughout the year, but I've never once mentioned David Gasan in that conversation. Exactly. That kid plays hard.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Not always perfect, not always well, but he was pretty good on.
Absolutely.
He's the reason they won. Look, Cam Carter shook off his slump. It seems like every time I get really on a kid, then they go, let's make Fitz look bad, because it's all about me. It's, you know, they're certainly making it about me. Of course, Arthur Coloma was, again, back to NBA standards. And that's just fun to watch when he gets going. But Gasan, 16 rebounds against a more physical front line, says a lot about where this team is. If this team engages the other team on both ends of the floor and matches energy and gets to loose balls, they somehow, some way, make those turnovers not mean as much. And I can't explain it. I saw a chart today about the turnover ratio among, you know, the top programs. I mean, everyone's over in the middle, clumped up on the graph, and K-State's way on the left, like all alone, like, we turn it over too much. You just sit there and wonder that team's record, if you just look at the graph, should be like 8-20, but they're not. They're right there in the mix for the tournament. I asked Jerome Tang after the game. He thinks it takes two. Beating Iowa State was a 1.5 victory in terms of getting in. That loss at Cincinnati is going to haunt them. I think they're in if they do that. But I don't know, man. Oklahoma is going to be in at 8-10. Their resume is pretty good. I did a resume comparison today with the Deep Purple instead of a Daily Delivery. Their resume is pretty good, but they're 8-10. in the conference. And I think K-State, if they can get, I personally believe now, as I studied it, if they can beat Texas, they move themselves on the bubble. I don't think they're on the right side of the bubble, but they're going to be right there in discussions. And who knows what the committee values, Brian? Mm-hmm. Maybe the committee is ignoring that net ranking altogether and saying, well, look at their record against quad one teams. K-State's done pretty well against quad one teams for a team on the right. bubble. I mean, they're like 4-7.
Yeah.
I mean, Cincinnati's 3-10 and their net rating's 30 points higher. Doesn't make sense.
No. I mean, and they don't really give you a calculation on how the net rating is computed either, because UCF's net rating is also, as you pointed out, is better than K-State's, even though they beat them by 25 points. K-State beats them in all the metrics, but yet somehow the net rating is higher than UCS. It's just insane. But I think they got to win two games. I think they got to beat Texas, and then they got to go beat Iowa State again. If they do that, they will be in the tournament. I don't think there's any way that you'd be able to keep them out, because then you've got two more quad one wins at the end of the season, which isn't that what the tournament, the committee always says, we want you playing your best ball at the end of the season. Well, it doesn't get more into the season than the conference tournament. They win those two games, I think they're in. They lose any one of them, I don't think they make it. They'll be on the bubble if they beat Texas, but I think they got to beat Iowa State again to show. And I know that's asking a lot, but I just say they put themselves in this position. So just go do it, and you'll be in the tournament.
And I'll state the obvious here. There's also some external factors that K-State can't control in this. You're talking about bid stealing. Does the committee decide to give two bids to the Missouri Valley now that Indiana State lost? And there's so many leagues in the conference where you might have a team that only has one or two or three losses all year, and you better hope that that team wins their conference tournament, because they're getting a bid either way. And if another team steals their automatic bid, then that team's going to steal K-State's at large. So I think K-State could win two and not get in if there's a ton of bid stealers. I think they could win one and get in if a lot of other things go their way. So, but they got to, I'll give you some coach speak here. They got to control what they can control.
Exactly.
I like that.
Exactly. I like that.
That's just a good motto for life, actually. That's not just coaching. That's how you get through life. I missed that Indiana State loss. They got to get them in. I'm sorry if it hurts the Big 12. That guy, excuse me, I can't recall his name, is an American treasure. I don't
know
his name either.
I just know he's got the Rex specs.
My God. It's Revenge of the Nerds college basketball style.
It feels like he could be a March. We need him in one shining moment.
Oh, yeah. Just being in the tournament for him is one shining moment. Just an amazing player. I apologize because I'm totally blanking his name, but what a special player Indiana State has. I almost think, Brian, that calculation of not quite being in if you beat Texas and then being in if you beat Iowa State, I think that a second win in a row over Iowa State is so dramatic. They skip Dayton. I think that's how big that would be. They go from in the field to not in the first four games, but we'll see what the committee does and what else is out there. I think a K-State Indiana State matchup in Dayton would still be fun, though. That'd be great.
Yeah.
He's kind of my spirit animal.
I mean, anything to get in the tournament, whatever it is. Now, me personally, I'm sorry. People are going to be upset. I don't count the play-in as being in the tournament. I just don't. I never have. I think it's garbage that they even have it, but they do. But I'm sorry. I just don't count that being the tournament. And I don't want Kansas State to be in that game. So hopefully they get to skip right over top of it, because if you look at it as a K-State thing for recruiting, just say, look at it from recruiting side. Were you really in the tournament if you lost in the play-in game? No, you weren't. Nobody paid attention to it. So no, I don't want K-State any part of that. I want them in the tournament, playing on Thursday, wherever that might be, and just go and get in. But first things first, I want them to beat Texas. And secondly, I want them to beat Iowa State. And I'm telling you, if they come out with the effort that they came out with on Saturday, those are two things that can get done.
I'll throw a cool one out here. We got quite the opportunity for your Kansas State Wildcats this week to end the Big 12 basketball run of the Texas Longhorns in men's and women's basketball. K-State women play against Texas today at 4:00. And then, of course, the K-State men play Texas. So you could say, hey, the last men's game and women's game that Texas ever played in the Big 12 were both losses to Kansas State, if both teams could get it done.
I'm just going to pause for a second and let that one soak in.
Just soak that one in. We'll circle back to that next week if it happens. And if it doesn't, we certainly won't circle back to it.
Yeah, we'll just ignore anything that happened. Yeah,
that's correct.
It's our show, damn it. Even if I don't know the name of the show, I can do what I want.
Do we get to throw a horn? If they do that, do we get to throw a horns down?
Oh, I would never, ever, ever, hold on, gotta get into the ring, ever do that. Why would you think that I would do that?
Rodney, I'm not real good. Rodney Terry's unhappy with you right now.
Oh my gosh. I'm not saying joke of a man, joke of a coach. It just that's just ridiculous. Come on, man. What are we doing?
Horned down thing. Christmas. Ridiculous. Soft as could be. I wish they would call technical for doing horns up because I find it offensive.
There you go.
And again, it's about me. But let's talk about the women. Big win over West Virginia. I don't think that is enough work to get them a first round site. So let's explain for those who don't know the women's tournament, the top four seeds in each region get to host the first sites. So it's significant to be a top four seed. It looks like K-State's at 5 right now. And honestly, you don't want to be at 4 in the last four in because you could get paired up with South Carolina in your region. And that's a ticket home. For almost everyone, you want to get South Carolina down the road where the stakes are high and maybe they're worn down or something's happened.
Or their players had to fight and are suspended or hypothetically.
Well, you know, let's talk about that. So if you missed it, South Carolina and LSU women had one hell of a fight in their game. And a brother of one of the players came over the scorer's table to help out his sister. Never seen that before. Now these players are all suspended for their first game of the NCAA tournament because it was in the championship game. So I believe from what I heard, one team is going to have 5 players and the other will have 6 players for first round game. They're playing a 16 seed. They could probably beat them 4-on-5. The disparity in women's basketball is that big. I mean, so I'm not too worried about either one of them losing, but maybe you can bait them into that.
That was crazy.
Yeah. We don't fight on this show.
No.
That's why we're doing the stream here. Oh. Yeah. No, not on the air. Yeah. I just fight with Kenley on Twitter.
You were mad about the nut fry.
I asked Chris Kleiman a very important question. Did you cut it out of the soundbite?
I was trying to save you the embarrassment of you admitting that you would not attend the Scott City Nut Fry.
I shared that I went many years ago, picked up at the buffet what I thought was
the fried
bull
nut.
Bull testicle, and took a bite and realized it was fish and called it good. Oh, that's fine. I didn't really want to do it.
Maybe I'll have to get out there sometime. It feels like a rite of passage.
Okay. But anyhow, that came up because the new special teams analyst is from Scott City. And what is he going to get to go to the nut fry? So he just wandered off into the weeds.
Yeah.
It was fun weeds. So Chris Kleiman, I love asking Chris Kleiman stuff like that because he plays along. He goes with it.
Yeah.
look, the women play this afternoon, evening, however you want to look at it, against Texas. It's one of the two semifinal games as their end of their tournament approaches. Tomorrow's kind of cool in Kansas City. You got those first four teams playing, 2 games for the men in the morning, early afternoon, the women's championship at night. I think K-State, if it wants to get to hosting, needs to beat Texas, and they'll be in to that. But again, you don't necessarily want to be on the 4 line. You want to get to the 3 line and then have a 2 opposite you, not one of the top seeds, because the top seeds tend to be really damn good, although Iowa doesn't like playing K-State. Brian, this is big. This is big for the women's program because I think they need to have success in the postseason and show we're here, we're ready to sustain this beyond Aoka Lee, and we're ready to be on the national stage and recruit at higher levels.
Yep, absolutely. And also, they haven't really played great down the stretch here. So I think beating Texas will show, hey, you know what? That was just a little lull that we hit. That's not who we are. And I think us as K-State fans, you know, we've watched them. When we know how good they actually are, we watched them all season long. Every team goes through a lull. They just happen to go through it at the end of the season. Mm-hmm. So I think beating Texas can get them back on track. But yeah, I think you're right, Fitz. We don't want to be the bottom four because that's going to spell trouble. It's not that nobody can beat South Carolina. They can be beat. It just makes your task, you know, that much harder because they are really, really good. But so is K-State. So, you know, that's the thing. So are we. So don't count ourselves short. We've got an opportunity here, but I would love to see it. I'll be honest. I would love to see them go win this whole thing. I would love for them to go win this whole thing just to show everybody that just what you said, Fitz, that we mean business. It was a lull that we were going through because if you look at it, I mean, K-State is one of the top teams in the Big 12. I think they win this game. I think they can actually go on to win it. But Texas is good. Let's not kid ourselves. Texas is really, really good. I know we don't like saying that, but it's the truth. They're really good. They got a player that might be – well, she's not going to be the first pick of the draft, but she won't be third. She's going to be second. They're that good. So we'll see.
Yeah, I think that this Texas game can kind of be a get-right game for K-State, a swagger-back game type of thing, because I don't know that we've seen – I don't mean this as a knock. If anything, I mean this to point out how high their ceiling is. I don't think we've seen this team play its best basketball since before Ayoka Lee was injured. And that's not saying they've been playing poorly or that they've been doing, you know – that they've been bad, but they were so good. There was a stretch where this team looked borderline unbeatable. There when they were 20-1 or whatever like that, you thought, well, they were ranked number two in the country, guys. I mean, so there was a stretch where this team looked unstoppable. I would love to see them get back to that tonight. I mean, let's not even go win on a you know, buzzer beater or a crazy ending. Go bury Texas, which, like you said, Brian, is a good team. And then you go into that championship game and have – I want them to go into that championship game and have that mentality that they are unstoppable a little bit. Yeah. Hey, we are one of the best teams in the country, and we're certainly the best team in this league. And K-State fans have a pretty cool opportunity to really paint that place purple today and then tomorrow if they win. It probably, to be honest, helps K-State that – KU lost because that there's probably less Jayhawk fans that would be in that arena, and any Jayhawk fans that are in that arena would be rooting for it, whoever is playing against K-State. So that the home crowd should be even more amplified for K-State now that they're the only Kansas team in that tournament.
I agree. I'm hoping that I know K-State fans will be there in large numbers. Heck, they were for the game the other night. It was kind of impressive. You play a home game with the men in the afternoon, and then you've got a substantial amount of fans in Kansas City, 5 hours later, tip-off times 5 hours later. Pretty much, I think some people watched K-State men play and headed to KC to watch the women play. Kansas City, I'm not going to be there, which kind of breaks my heart because I love the Big 12 tournament. I love it as much as anyone, you know, that covers it. I think it's a really cool event for the town. Mm-hmm. I think Kansas City does an incredible job staging it. It matters. The entire downtown area is electrified. We had a question over here in the comments from our friend Alan. Which fan group of the new teams will show up in KC? I don't know what that horn's down. I have no,
that's disrespectful, Alan.
I better hide that before we get a letter. I will be interested to see.
That's a good question.
What's one of the new, you know, I don't know if Houston has a big following.
I think I know Houston has the fans. I know BYU has traveled pretty well, I think. I know personally, I know when BYU football played in Lawrence this year, I remember thinking, wow, they really made the trip. Now, I could have just been fooled because both schools are blue. But I think BYU will probably have a lot of fans there. We've seen like some UCF. I go a lot on Twitter, probably too much. So maybe I'm judging too many. There could be people who aren't on social media who are making the trip. Maybe UCF. It probably the answer should be Houston. I mean, they're the one seed. They're the number one team in the country right now. And to me, they look like the best team in the country. So their fans should show up. But that's a good question.
I don't think that. Well, you know what? There will be West Virginia fans because they've come to learn that this is just a party. You know, maybe our team's going to be done on Tuesday, but our livers won't.
We need the Mountaineer fans to come to keep the Cyclone fans in check. To beat them, but just to kind of drive them nuts all weekend.
Absolutely. If you own a bar, remember, load up on your Busch Light. All the Busch Lights you can get. True. Just get a truck of it, and you're going to run out. I'll be fascinated. Do Cincinnati fans show up? Houston fans? We've been bragging about Kansas City for a while. I know there's a great Cincinnati account I love following, and Matt wants it moved somewhere else. I'm like, well, just get in the conference and join, and get to Kansas City and see what you think, because it's going to be there a while, and I kind of suspect they might be announcing an extension or something. Something's going on, but I'm fired up to see what happens. Even though I won't be there, my guys will report back. I think it's best.
Yeah.
But Brian and I might just go live during the Big 12 tournament. We don't know. We don't have rules.
Hey, you know, a little watch party.
We can do one of our Fitzcasts. If they get to the NCAA tournament, we might do that too. I don't know.
Hey, I would add this.
We're just young guys getting wild.
I would add this. If K-State does beat Texas, and I don't mean this as a call to action, but just a statement of fact, K-State fans better show up, because that's going to be a home game for Iowa State if they don't. Because that Cyclone fans, man, the Big 12 tournament, there's the jokes, and I think some people kind of poke fun at them for it, but I'm not even poking fun. If anything, it's impressive, but they show up for this thing, man. They come out. It's the first time I went when I was a student at K-State. I went and I was like, what the heck are there all these? I assumed it would kind of be, 40% KU fans, 40% K-State fans, and 10% other. It wasn't like that at all. I mean, there was a lot of them, man.
I think Iowa State might have as many or more fans than KU. I don't know how they do it. Most of us go on spring break to a warm place like Cancun. Folks from Central Iowa think Kansas City is Cancun. Mm-hmm. I mean, they just show up and drink excessively and have a great time. They're amazing fans. They're just incredible fans. And just scream their faces off for the team. I love the Big 12 tournament. Guys, let's park a break in here. Let's hear from our sponsors, our good friends at Synergy Financial Partners, as they have bitten off to be the first sponsors of the Insiders. And we sure do appreciate it from Jeff and all the gang down at Synergy there in Georgia. But they're K-Staters. Well, their son played here. Their sons played football at K-State. Let's take a break right now and hear from Synergy.
At Synergy Financial Partners, the mission is to change the way Americans plan for their financial future. Synergy doesn't just offer you a financial plan. At Synergy, the goal is to help you find your best financial future. Learn more at synergyfinancial.com.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Welcome back to the show. Let's head back to the studio.
Welcome back to the K-State Insiders. I'm Fitz. That's Big B. That's GK. Do you have a nickname, Glenn? I don't even know.
No, I wouldn't say that.
The Gleninator.
There we go. Now we're cooking. Yeah.
Nothing works. Let's pivot a little bit here and talk about some spring football for K-State. Brian, Avery Johnson is like, I don't know if he's the moth or the light. Maybe he's the light, and everyone wants to go to him like moths. But there's so much going on with this K-State team, and they have an opportunity to be really good. In fact, they're picked to be in the championship game with Utah by almost every, you know, betting line out there. The odds are in their favor. But you know this better than anyone. If you don't get that offensive line solidified from day one, someone's going to beat you. And they got some work to do, don't they?
They do. They do. They got to fix it. I shouldn't say fix it. They just got to rebuild it, the offensive line. You know, they lost a lot. So, but rebuilding the offensive line has got to be priority number one in the spring. Look, you've got Avery Johnson. Like I said, I'm on record as saying that he's going to be what I think everybody thinks that he is, but he won't be any good if the offensive line is not any good. So you got to get it fixed. You know, getting the other weapons around on the outside, a new offensive play caller, all that stuff is nice and shiny and neat. It really is. Mm-hmm. But if the line isn't up to snuff, then none of that's going to matter. So I think that's got to be priority number one going into spring. And I know a lot of people are almost taking that for granted. And that's the part that I have little trepidation about, is everybody just assumes because Avery's back there that everything's going to be okay. And I'm like, that's not how football works. It's never worked that way. I go, you got to get this offensive line in gear. And I'm not saying they won't be, so I'm not trying to alarm people, but I do want people to understand that that is an extremely important part of the team that's got to get solidified.
Yeah, I think there's probably a decent amount of valid confidence from K-State fans. I think about for myself, I know that 1 year after they lost, I want to say Noah Johnson and Josh Rivas and Ben Adler, all three of those guys on the line went pro. And I remember thinking, like, man, those guys were pretty good. Like, how are they going to replace those guys? And then look at what their line became. I think Connor Riley has earned probably the benefit of the doubt that he's going to have that O-line ready to rock and roll. And they still got some guys up there that actually played a lot of football. Carver Willis played a lot this past season. Hadley Panthers played a ton of football, and I think he's going to get drafted after this next season. And then Taylor Poirier comes back. So those three guys are probably your anchors of that O-line. I think it actually is still going to be a strength, but make no mistake, you lose number 50, and there's work to be done, right? Like, he was that good. In the same way that we saw the defensive line maybe not get home as much because they lost number 91. Like, these things happen. Like, that's right. You can't say, oh, the O-line will be just as good even though they lost Cooper Beebe. Maybe they will, but it's going to take some guys to step up in a big way.
Yeah, that's my thing, is you might think you fully replace guys like Cooper Beebe. Oh, they're doing just fine. But when it's third and two, you used to be able to just run behind that sucker. Between him and KT Levenston, they would dominate the left side and give a good back enough room just to find that sneaky hole to get the first down. Mm-hmm. Now you're going to have to rediscover what works in certain situations. And I think that might be a process. So we'll discover that. But Brian, beyond the line, what sticks out to you about spring football and what needs to be accomplished for K-State?
I think they've got to figure out the defensive line. Got to figure out what's going on there. Obviously, you got to get more of a pass rush from just the defensive line than what we did last season. We got to be able to do it without constantly blitzing to get pressure. But also another thing is making sure that our skill positions, that our wide receivers, you know, that we get up to snuff with that. And when I mean up to snuff, I mean be able to make explosive plays down the field more consistently, be able to run, you know, dig routes over the middle without, not that we want to exclude the tight end, don't get me wrong, but your receivers need to be able to go in there and make catches. And that was something that we just didn't see last year. We haven't really seen in a while, if we're being honest with ourselves at K-State. So we got to be able to have guys to be able to do that. That opens up so much more of what you can do offensively, is when you can have your wide receiver go in there and catch not just a slant route, but a dig route. And I know a lot of people think, well, Brian, what are you talking about? A dig route. Hey, it's just what you mean. You're digging out the inside. Run 12 yards down the field, cut inside, catch the ball in front of the safety, and know that you're going to get hit. Go make that catch. That's what K-State needs. And you know how good fits, Glenn, that Avery Johnson will be if he's got receivers that are able to go and do that. Do you know how much more that will open up in this offense if we've got receivers that can go in there and make those kinds of catches? It's just the passing tree and everything off of that will just be limitless. And that's the key. It's just we've got to find that. And if they do, and if they do, and here's the thing. I think we've got the guys capable of doing that. We just got to put them in that position. I really, really do. That's not a knock on Colin Klein. It isn't. Not at all. Because I don't know that the guys last year, some of the guys, were capable of doing that. I think we've got them now. I think that they're more acclimated, and we've got a quarterback that will throw it in there. And just from what he does and kind of offenses, some RPOs and stuff like that, they're not going to be able to key on that. We'll get a lot of one-on-one coverage to take advantage of, and I think we got to do it.
Yeah, and if the receivers are good, that opens up so many opportunities for Avery to run and for DJ Giddens. You know, you have to – people talk about establish the run, and rightfully so, but, like, when you establish the pass, then those guys have to back off a little bit, which makes room for you to run. I'll say this. I think that this receiver room, when you look at those four, Keegan Johnson, Jace Brown, Jaden Jackson, and the Penn State transfer, is it Cephas or Cephas? Do we know?
Cephas.
Dante Cephas. So those four, I think on paper, has to be, you know, maybe the more highly anticipated group in recent memory for K-State receivers. With that being said, how many times have we said that, right? Like, man, this wide receiver group could be real good. And then their leading receiver averages like 50 yards a game, you know, or whatever. I'm paraphrasing. But so I think on paper, they do look good. I also think that on paper doesn't mean anything. And so let's see if they can go out to make the plays. I will say this, man. Jace Brown, I think the addition of a healthy Keegan Johnson, obviously is big for K-State. Cephas, obviously is big for K-State. Having those guys and having them be impactful is big for Jace Brown to get some attention off him because he was the new guy this past year. In fact, he put up some numbers. I think I had a tweet that his freshman numbers had only been put up before by guys with the last name Lockett. He was that good. He's not going to be unknown. Oh crap. Maybe we should stop this guy. He's going to be on the scouting report, which means that K-State needs those other guys to step up to make sure that they can't just triple team Jace Brown all game.
I spent a lot of years hoping K-State would get back to throwing to the tight end. Ben Sennett made my dreams come true. Yeah. I think that will continue because their young tight ends are highly effective, but now I've shifted my focus. Can we find a receiver at Kansas State that can take the lid off and stretch the field down? We just haven't seen a really deep threat at Kansas State since a guy named Lockett was running around. And yes, there is a Lockett on the team, but I don't know that he is that guy. He's a little bit of a tweener in many ways and struggling to find time on the field, although he was fielding punts at the bowl game, which I think was a positive sign. I'm intrigued by this spring. I'm not a big fan of spring football. I think it's, you know, it's kind of like reporting on homework. I mean, because that's what the guys are doing, you know, right? They're learning and they're figuring things out. And now we got to go report on how they're doing on homework. It doesn't really move the needle for me, but it does give us something to talk about. And that's always good. K-State baseball is underway. They got a no-hitter, a combined no-hitter. They won their first series in Big 12 play against Cincinnati with a dramatic ending yesterday. I'm going to be the Grinch here. Someone asked about why can't K-State get good, crisp starting pitching. Brian, you know what I'm going to say. They're too far north. These kids don't want to come up here and pitch in 40-degree weather in you know, March. It's just it's dangerous for their arms, and it's going to be an ongoing issue. But I got to say, Pete Hughes has put together a team. This has a high ceiling. Baseball is a little bit different. Look, the Yankees are – Red Sox or whoever's a dominant team don't win every game. They probably win 2/3 of their games and they're dominant for that. Well, college baseball is the same way. I think you want them to line up and win every game like it's football or basketball. That's not how baseball works.
No.
I'll be interested to see where this team ends up as they progress through the Big 12.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like I said, K-State's a good team. You start off the season. It's just like any baseball. There's so many games in baseball and there's so many series. I mean, it just takes a while. Takes a while to get in your groove. It's one of the reasons why you look at professional baseball, they go to spring training. Well, they go to spring training to get their body going, to get everything going. You know, they don't technically have a spring training for college baseball. I mean, I know they start preparing for the season, but it's not the same. So, you know, you use the early part of your schedule to kind of get yourself ready and get yourself going. So, but you are definitely right as far as the North thing. And look, you mentioned the Yankees and the Red Sox. Well, they don't have spring training in Boston and New York. And there's a reason for that. You know, they're not doing that around this time of the year. So, you know, it becomes tougher for Northern teams to compete. It's not impossible. Not saying that it's impossible or anything like that. It just becomes more difficult. And that's true. Yeah. But look, K-State's going to win a lot of baseball games this year. They got a lot of good baseball players on their team, which, you know, you need that obviously to win. But we'll see how it goes. I don't want people to be discouraged and thinking it's like football or basketball that you got to go out there and win 80-85% of your games. That's not how baseball works.
Nope, right.
Not at all.
Yeah, I think that Pete Hughes has built a special roster this year. And I would tell you guys this from offseason conversations. They had guys who this is not even offseason conversations. This is known fact. They had guys who got drafted that decided to come back. They had guys who had undrafted free agent offers that decided to come back. They had at least one or two guys who had SEC schools saying NIL, and they decided to come back. So Pete Hughes built something special. There's a reason all these guys are so loyal to him and so loyal to Kansas State and decided to stay here and come back here. And with all that being said, we're all three smart enough to know that none of that matters if you don't win baseball games. And so they got to go out and do it. But I think they have the pieces in there. I mean, the Tyson Nabors is not pitching right now. He's banged up and he's, I think, the best closer in the country. Getting him healthy will be big in Big 12 play. I know they're being very cautious with him. I think that Kalen Culpepper is a stud on the infield. And then Brady Day is a guy that everyone's talking about Kalen Culpepper, rightfully so, but Brady Day is having an incredible start to the season. I think maybe it was the Braves or somebody. He had a pro offer over the offseason, decided to come back. He's hitting lights out right now. So, the over-under on most of these K-State baseball games might be like 27.5 right now. But that's all right. As long as you win them, I don't care how many runs you're scored.
Yeah, I mean, I should be fired up about baseball in this state. I get to cover a team coached by a Boston Irishman. And the team down the road, that guy came in a clear play for ratings by hiring a guy named Fitzgerald.
There you go.
It's not even look, Kate, I see what you're doing. You're trying to get a whole new demographic. You know,
there we go.
The female demographic to show up because they hear Fitzgerald and they show up.
If he starts hosting a show called the KU Insiders, we're going to have to ask him some questions there. Hey, back to the pitching staff real quick, though. K-State has had some good – I mean, I look at Jordan Wicks, who is with the Cubs and actually is the first guy in his draft class to get called up to the big leagues, and he's throwing well with the Cubs right now. He was a K-State guy, Tyson. And so I think Tyson Nabors can be that next guy, and they got a couple other pitchers, Owen Berema, and the more they can solidify those guys, and then the more – they can recruit and say, see, we've had pitchers come up here and then get drafted and then get the call up. And so I think they're on a path of getting more and more of those guys. And I think that's why it makes this season even more. I just had an interview with Pete Hughes the other day. He talked about getting in the national picture and making K-State a baseball team that people around the country know about K-State baseball. And this year's a huge step for their program to do that.
Let me ask this, if to get into that national picture, do you think it's kind of a, Omaha or bust type of thing? Do they got to get to the College World Series or do they need to just kind of be, you know, compete for the Big 12 title again?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think that there's a number of probably ways to get in that national picture. I think we would all agree that K-State women's basketball has done it this year, even if they don't go to the Final Four or whatever, because they were as high as number two at one point in the season. They do have an All-American like Aoka Lee. They beat Iowa, right? So, like, there's a number of ways to do it, whether it's big wins, whether it's they had the no-hitter, they had a walk-off win last night. Like, quite honestly, sometimes exciting wins, even more than just winning, can get you more attention across the board. So I think there's a number of ways it can do it. I'll state the obvious. It starts and ends with winning baseball games. But I think they also have the star power to do it, which is important. Let's just be real. Like, you could have seven real solid players and have the same record as another team that has two studs, two of the best players in the league or the country, and that team's going to be talked about more. And I think K-State right. has that star power and guys like Culpepper and guys like Tyson Nabors. We probably ought to start throwing Brady Day into that conversation. So I think that can do it, but make no mistake, getting to Omaha would you know, you start getting in there with those SEC schools and they start talking about you and you're in another league at that point.
Right.
Yeah. I think Omaha's a really tangible goal. I mean, that every team wants it every year, but the realities of how baseball's played and the wear and tear and you got to have pitching and all that mm-hmm. always catches up to the teams that don't really belong there mm-hmm. And teams float to the surface. I think K-State this year is good enough to float to the surface and get to Omaha, but they got to take care of business so they get a good draw in the tournament, maybe get some hosting and get that going. I'm intrigued by baseball this year. Our Cole Carmody will be all over that because he's a baseball freak, but he loves himself some baseball. Guys, I want to go unwind the clock here and go backwards. And by the way, I don't know who stole that hour from my clock, but I want it back. I didn't. Nobody told me it was coming, and I just woke up and an hour
was gone. I was still awake, and you can imagine my confusion when I was like, how is it already 3:15?
I was just like, what?
I was awfully confused,
Let's go back to the great handshake mystery, controversy in Allen Fieldhouse, just because I want to touch on it. I'm still confused by it. Look, Jerome Tang was, I'm going to say it, pissed off about how his team played. And he did whistle through the handshake line pretty fast. But he was asked about shaking hands with Bill Self, and he did shake hands with Bill Self. I still don't really understand what this is about. And because Bill Self, I think, went by faster when they lost in Manhattan. We showed the video side by side. Bill Self whistled right past Jerome Tang. Glenn, you're a guy who covers both programs, and I value that in this conversation. Give me your assessment of that whole thing.
Yeah, I think two things can be true at once, probably. Jerome Tang saying he did a flyby is probably a fair and accurate assessment. You can probably also say that most coaches, when they lose, especially on the road, they do a flyby. So that's also fair. Here's where I'll tell you that I believe it stemmed from what I've seen and heard is Tang – he did shake Bill Self's hands, and the head coach's handshake was the same to me as it was in Manhattan. That was the exact same. It was actually the second coach when Tang got to Curtis Townsend, and Coach Tang was doing more of a good game, not, you know, kind of waving his hand back and forth. And I'm not saying right or wrong, I'm just making an observation.
No,
waving his hand back and forth more than aiming for other hands, if that makes sense. And I think in doing that, he missed Curtis Townsend's hand. And what I saw was Curtis Townsend kind of throw his hands up and look around like WTF was that. And then they kept moving. My guess, this is a guess, is that on the way back to the locker room or in the locker room, Curtis Townsend said to Bill Self, Tang didn't shake my effing hand. And then Bill Self got in the postgame press conference and said Tang didn't want to shake hands. I think everyone assumed that he meant he didn't want to shake hands with me. He did shake hands with Bill Self. I don't think he shook hands with everyone. I don't know enough, and I don't claim to be an expert on handshaking procedures and how many hands, what's the over-under on hands you're supposed to shake down the line. I don't know. I will say I was a little surprised that maybe Bill called it out in the press conference. But it just being completely subjective here, I went back and watched the full handshake line, and I think Bill did – there was more handshakes with K-State's assistance from Bill than there was with Jerome with KU's assistance in Lawrence, just to be fair. I'm not saying right or wrong. So there's my take on it, your handshake analysis.
Okay, yeah. You know, I need the Big 12 to issue a memo on the amount of – percentage of skin contact. The grip ratio is very important in this. I want this all broken down by the conference so we know when we should be offended. The misunderstanding was, I think KU took that as a disrespect from Jerome Tang, and maybe it did come across that way, but that had nothing to do with KU. That was all about how angry he was. I've never seen him that way about his own team. As we mentioned earlier in the show, he did call them out from the podium at the postgame. Can we call it a podium at KU? It's a table in front of the media.
Yeah.
Table. It's not elevated, is it? I don't think it is. Yeah. Call him out from the table with them sitting there. So I think that shows how angry he was with his own players. But
yeah,
Brian, I saw this as the same thing we've seen around this conference. Coaches taking to the podium to send a message to their own team. I thought, honestly, Bill Self, people are like, well, he was asked the question. Well, it's not a deposition. He doesn't have to answer it.
No. Well, he here, just said, I'll interject there real quick, Fitz, because to circle back to that, he was asked, was there something in the handshake? The first word out of his mouth was no, first of all. And then he said, no, he just didn't want to shake hands. He did a flyby. That was question over, next question. We moved on to a few other questions. Then someone else asked about, hey, did you guys remember that celebration in Manhattan? And did that motivate your team today? The grand celebration when they had beat you. And that's when he circled back to it without being prompted and said, well, when we lost in Manhattan, we at least shook their hands. So yes, he was asked the question, but he unprompted, he came back to it in a different question that wasn't about the handshake line. I'll just for context, I'm not saying
yeah, there's an thank issue. Thank you. Appreciate that. It. I know we've got a lot of KU viewers, but look, K-State has those celebrations after every home win. That wasn't just special because it was beating Kansas.
Right.
Jerome Tang goes into the student body after every home victory. And yes, big wins, they do storm the student section. Okay, that's now a new tradition, if you want to call it that. I don't know if you can have new traditions, but that they've tried to solve this court storming by storming the students. So if you're going to complain about that, then quit complaining about court stormings. I get a little exhausted by this, but Brian, I feel like these are situations where coaches are just trying to light a fire. Like they just beat Kansas State by 20 some points. They just whooped them. But Bill Self's thinking, we got to go to Houston and we better have a little fire under us and not feel comfortable. I think that's all that was about, was an opportunity to try to get his team feeling disrespected after winning by 20.
Probably, you know, Bill Self's a really good coach. That's the first thing. So he knows how to motivate a team. Now, ironically, it didn't work because he went to Houston and got their brains beat in, but that's a different conversation for a different time. But, you know, I'm with you, Fitz. I kind of get exhausted about all of this, but I do enjoy kind of the gamesmanship because, as Glenn mentioned, Bill Self he came back to it after he had already answered the question. And even though somebody else asked him again, he could have just said, no, there was nothing to it and moved on. But he didn't do that. He chose to come back and do that. So is there a little something there? Probably. Is it that big of a deal? Probably not. But, you know, as outsiders maybe looking in, I don't mind it. I don't mind it at all. I like the gamesmanship. Now, I think there's nothing to it. I mean, do they despise each other? Probably not, but it's a rivalry. You're not supposed to like each other. So I'm okay with it.
It's a rivalry is exactly what Bill Self said, actually. When he answered the question, I think his exact quote was, if this didn't stick with them, then they probably shouldn't be playing here.
Yeah.
Because that's what rivalries are all about. So while, he did kind of call him out, he also, I think, expressed that, like, in a way he understood. I think he was I think he was upset and said, why didn't you shake my assistant's hand? But I also think he was like, yeah, I'm not surprised the guy was pissed off, right? Like, I think he gets that. That's how rivalries are. Like, and I kind of agree. If Tang was, hey, boy, did you guys play hard, huh? You know, like, I would be like, hey, coach, why are we – let's not, you know, shoot the shit with him post-game. But so I think he understands that, and he said that. I think there's a lot of people who have just taken not actually looked at the soundbite or looked at the full quote from this and the context of it. But hey, I will say one other thing real quick. A lot of people, why are you talking about this? Why are you covering this? When you have a huge rivalry, and again, we cover both teams, and one coach calls on another coach and says, he didn't shake my hand, that is newsworthy. Whether or not you want to say the fact that he didn't shake hands was newsworthy, which I think it is, the coach saying it in the press conference is newsworthy. And also then people say, well, you didn't give the – we report what we know, right? And so I reported that Bill Self said this. I didn't say – my headline didn't say, Jerome Tang, sore loser, stormed off the court. My headline also didn't say, Bill Self lies and says Jerome Tang didn't shake his hand. My headline said, Self says Tang didn't want to shake hands, which is a fact. Self said that.
Absolutely. Here's another thing, and just real quick. I think a lot of people – get bent out of shape about this because just talking about the basketball rival, and we could say the football is the exact opposite. for so long, K-State wasn't competitive with KU. Mm-hmm. They just weren't. They weren't competitive. So, and now that they have become somewhat competitive, I shouldn't even say somewhat. I mean, they're competitive with them now. Now that they are, I think the fan bases on both sides look at anything and just go off the deep end and just decide, oh, well, he's totally disrespecting us. Oh, we're not disrespecting you. That's not what happened. You did the same thing to us.
Yeah, yeah.
Again, it's just what we're talking about. It's a rivalry, and it's what we yeah. want. So I like that aspect of it. I really do. But I think that's – I think it's new for everybody, Glenn, is that everybody thinks, okay, well, you're going overboard. But for so long, people didn't get that crazy about it because K-State couldn't compete with KU. Well, yeah. now they can. So it's different.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And you could probably say that both – I think both fan bases probably feel a little bit threatened by that. I think you could probably say that K-State fans during football season didn't like that – didn't like that we had to get that last first down. And KU fans during basketball season don't like that they've lost in Manhattan the last couple of years. And it's – yeah, like you said, Brian, it makes sense. I mean, yes. now people's reactions don't make sense, but it makes sense that they don't make sense, does that, if that makes sense.
Yep. Fan equals fanatic.
Yep. Never forget that. Never ever forget that. We got a lot of people in here. Make sure you're subscribing to this YouTube channel. Hit the thumbs up, leave comments. We got some great comments. K-Net, I'm saving yours for last. Make sure you check out the Big 12 Insiders. We do shows, live shows, Tuesday through Friday, and I think you'll enjoy that. Those numbers are beginning to pick up quite a bit. I think we're doing Texas Tech tomorrow, aren't we, Brian, heading into the Big 12 tournament?
No.
TCU?
Yes. TCU tomorrow.
I don't know.
TCU.
Both guys have J names, and it just confuses my old man brain. Let's park our last break real quick. We're running behind on this. We'll be right back. This is the K-State Insider, sponsored by Synergy Financial Partners.
At Synergy Financial Partners, the vision is to build the world's largest consumer financial education and empowerment company. Synergy doesn't just offer you a financial plan. At Synergy, the goal is to help you find your best financial future. Learn more at synergyfinancial.com.
The chilling new original docuseries on Paramount Plus.
Why did he kill his family? The answer lies across the ocean in a woman named Sylvie.
She's a can model.
Where desire leads to deception.
I ended up spending $12,000 and $15,000 a day.
It was addictive.
I can't get you out.
And obsession leads to murder.
Who did this to your family?
You can't really maintain a fantasy forever.
Control Alt Desire. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
Welcome back to the show. Let's head back to the studio.
Fitz, Big B, and as best as we could determine, the Glenninator are with us. I think K-Ned caught it here. When I ask you about nicknames, that sounded like I have no nicknames I want you to know about.
Yeah.
Come on.
There it is. There it is.
Hey, the one that, yeah, I mean, maybe. In college, the guys in my frat called me Schneebly, which is from, I think it's from, what's the movie? Jack Black.
Okay.
I'm blanked, with the band and he's the teacher. School of Rock. Rock. Yeah. He, at one point in that, he says, shut up, Schneebly. And I don't know why. I guess maybe they wanted me to shut up. So they called me Schneebly. I don't know.
Was this like an animal that's going by you? And I will name you Schneebly.
I don't know how it happened. I think just like one of my buddies just called me that and it stuck. And so then all the guys older than me called me that. And then all the younger guys, I didn't introduce myself as that. So then all the younger guys who joined the frat after me just called me Glenn. So I haven't been called that in quite a while, but there was about a 2-year span in my life where I was called that almost exclusively.
I'll take Glenninator over there.
Schneebly.
Guys, getting back to the KU thing before we wrap this up, this is fun. They're mm-hmm. a little heat in basketball. There's a little heat in football. Heck, there's a little heat in baseball. KU got a big series win over the weekend, too. There's women's basketball. They went at it a little bit. Man, this is great. This is what it's supposed to be about.
Yes.
Yeah, the rivalries are fun, and it's better for, I think, for everybody when both sides are competitive, right? And like people get right into it, and there's more tickets sold, and more people watch our videos and click on our articles, right? It's good for us too when everybody's competitive. But yeah, I mean, it's awesome. It's as much as K-State fans want KU to lose and KU fans want K-State to lose, at the end of the day, when both are good, it actually is pretty dang fun.
Yes, and most importantly, is you don't want to beat up on somebody. Don't get me wrong. Back when I played, beating KU and smashing them into the dirt, it was fun. Don't get me wrong. It was very fun, but it would have been better to be able to beat the brakes off of them if they were good. And that's what fans really like is, yes, we want to beat you and that's fine, but I want to beat you when you're good. I don't want to just beat you when you're not any good. That doesn't mean anything. And then over time, the rivalries start to lose their luster. And that's why I think fans are having a little, you know, it's starting to come back, and they jump at anything. You know, when anything happens, they jump at that. But that's, to me, that's good. That's what a rivalry is. Set things off. Just, hey, somebody dropped a coin on the ground. Well, that's a better coin because it dropped in that than it is. Okay, I'm for it. I love it, man. Just get after it, people. Get after it. So, it's good.
These people are crazy, man. These people are irrational. But it's incredible. I mean,
I am one of those people too. I don't even act like I'm not. I am a fanatic. I love to have a good time with all that stuff. Hey, it is what it is. I mean, look at me. I'm in my Steelers gear today because we signed Russell Wilson. I'm a fanatic, man. I love it. I love it.
I would love to do maybe a whole that hour a good, with you and Gilbert on that signing.
I was going to say, Fitz is thinking maybe that would have been a good reason for you to not wear your Steelers gear today.
Yeah. Look, both athletic departments are in great places. I mean, they both have dynamic ADs who fit their fan bases.
Yeah.
Great head coaches in football and basketball and other sports. It's fun times to cover this and, you know, to see the rivalry really blossom into, you know, what it should be. Look, I've always viewed KU and Missouri as a distraction. It's like Oklahoma and Texas. Oklahoma and Oklahoma State's still a rivalry, but they would always count Texas first. Now that they're not playing each other, it's hard to count Missouri as your big rivalry. I think that's been good. Well, guys, it's been a fun show. Appreciate it very much. Glenn, I'm going to try to write down some other ideas. If you got any ideas for Glenn's official nickname, please put them in the comments once this video posts, because I'll be really excited for some suggestions.
Fun. Yeah.
That's it for this week's edition of the K-State Insiders. We'll be back tomorrow with the Big 12 Insiders. It's going to be a fun week. Big B and I will be in our studios covering the Big 12 tournament. Stick with us. We're going to have fun, and I think you will too.
This has been a GoPowerCat.com and Spirit Street production. Please support this show by subscribing to this YouTube channel or follow us on your favorite podcast platform.
Check out our new NBA show, Beyond the Arc, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can find me, John Gonzalez, NBA insider Bill Reiter, and Ashley Nicole Moss, 5 days a week talking all things NBA. Whether you're looking for insightful discussions, upbeat commentary, breaking news, interviews, or coverage of all the biggest stories in the NBA, our new show is the place to be 5 days a week. Download and follow Beyond the Arc on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your favorite podcasts.